Hey, I know you don't smoke weed. I know this. But I'm gonna get you high today. Cause it's Friday, you ain't got no job, and you ain't got shit to do.
Oh, no thanks. I got some store-bought right over here on my own.
No, man. This is grass.
You mean marijuana?
George Tote Weed.
Man. Absolutely George Tote Weed. Are you kidding me, man? He grew fields of that stuff. Yeah.
That was my skull. I'm so wasted.
Rolling baddies, smoking blunts. Who smokes the blunts? Who smoke the blunts? Rolling blunts and smoking.
Let me get a nickel bag.
$15, little man. Put that shit in my hand. If that money doesn't show, then you owe me, oh.
This is across bluegrass, Kentucky bluegrass featherbed bench and Northern California Sensimilla. The amazing stuff about this is that you can play 36 holes on it in the afternoon. Take it home and just get stoned to the bejesus belt.
Oh, yeah.
You know what time it is.
It's the SLS Cast Easter 420 Spectacular.
And welcome one and all to episode 71 of the SLS Cast. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, episode 71, the SR 71 Blackbird episode. Can you see why I'm calling it the SR 71 Blackbird episode? Because it's episode 71. This is a plate, and not the band, not the one-hit wonder band from like 2000. No. This is the like coolest jet ever from when I was a kid and growing up, and probably one of the coolest jets just like ever. This was a jet so far ahead of its time that they couldn't figure out how to properly put fuel in it. So what they did was they took the fuel cells and they literally had gaps in the metal, and the fuel would just be pouring out of this thing, and then it would take off and get so hot that the titanium seams would weld together in flight. And that's how the fuel tanks would close. And then they'd have to immediately refuel just as soon as they got in the air. That is one badass plane. And with that little bit of aeronautical knowledge, I, of course, am always Matt.
What the fuck are you talking about, man? Aeronautical logic. That's way too out there for me, man. Way.
I understand. Well, you know, I figure one of us has to be the straight man for this episode. And
wait, hold,
I guess it's going to be
straight man.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? Do you mean like?
I think you're kind of funny.
Cool, man. Cool. And I'm Tim, by the way. So,
yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. And how's life been going for you, Tim?
Life has been going pretty high, man. Pretty high. Can't complain. I went to a Jerry Lewis movie marathon this past weekend, which was pretty interesting. Saw he's getting his handprints and footprints. They're in the Walk of Fame. They're in the front of the Hollywood, but in front of the Chinese Theater, which I thought he already had his handprints and his footprints there, but I guess not. So TCM, Turner Classic Movies, has been sponsoring and hosting various screenings of his flicks around town, and Tarantino took four prints that he owns from his own private collection, and they were At War with the Army, which is one of Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis's first movies. Horrible movie. I do not recommend that one. Not funny, not good. The other one was Hollywood or Bust, which was their last movie together, which is pretty funny. The other one is, the name of it is not there in my mind right now. I wonder why. But it's where he was the captain of a ship, and he lost the ship during World War II, so he has to go find it. Very funny one. One of the best physical gags I've ever seen. It's great. And then the fourth movie, which was actually the second we watched, is the Tony Curtis and Jerry Lewis movie called Boeing Boeing, which I gotta say, I've never seen the movie before. I've never really, I might have heard of it kind of in passing, but it is absolutely hilarious. It's great. It's where Tony Curtis is a ladies' man and he's having all these affairs with various flight attendants, and due to the flight attendant's like schedule change, there's like this one day where it turns out all of them are going to be together in the same apartment at the same time, and so it's the two of them, the two guys, trying to juggle three or four flight attendants so they don't find out what's going on. Very, very funny. And I'm actually pleased to know that you, Matt, you saw it. I was very excited to hear that.
I saw that movie. Oh my goodness. I'm trying to think. It has been over 20 years since I have seen that movie. My mom was a huge Jerry Lewis fan, and so growing up, I watched tons and tons of his movies. I'll never forget the first time that I truly remember laughing at one of his movies. This wasn't even one of the Martin and Lewis ones, because I just happened to watch a couple of Jerry Lewis movies before I was like, oh my gosh, this guy's funny, and started going out and looking at the old movies. And it's this one scene, I can't even remember the flick, and I want to say he's like an orderly or something. He goes and he's at like a spa, and he goes up to a water fountain with a tin cup and puts water, and it's just like this terrible, terrible racket of water going into this cup. And then he drinks it, and it's just, again, this terrible racket sounds like, you know, someone's beating a tin roof with a stick. And then he sets the cup down and walks away, and as he pans out, it's because it was mineral water. And I just got such the biggest kick out of that. I just laughed my ass off. I mean, I was like 12.
Was it the bellboy?
It was just hilarious. It might have been. I was just laughing. And then from there, so it'd have to have been between the ages of 12 and 15, 16 maybe, that I'd seen Boeing. So, yeah.
And I've also come to the conclusion that he is the Rob Schneider of that time, because during the movie, before each set movie, they played about three of the old trailers of various Jerry Lewis movies. And some of the movie titles are so ridiculous, and you've seen the South Park where they kind of go off on Rob Schneider, like the boys go to the movie theater and it's Rob Schneider as the Stapler, and all these movies where he is like, where he accidentally ends up being something else that's super duper ridiculous, but isn't quite as ridiculous as his normal self. You know, like the Stapler, and when he was the hot chick, and he was the animal, so it's always the something something. And I realize, like, going through Jerry Lewis's, and I'm on IMDb now going through his movies, and you have The Errand Boy, The Ladies' Man, Cinderfella, The Bellboy, Visit to a Small Planet, Star Time, Don't Give Up the Ship, that's actually the name of the one that I forgot the name of it, Living It Up, Three Ring Circus, Artists and Models, Pardoners, The Delicate Delinquent, It's Only Money, The Patsy, The Family Jewel, I love The Family Jewels, that's one of my all-time favorites. Three on a Couch, that really gets me. Oh, here's a good one, Hook, Line, and Sinker, Don't Raise the Bridge, Lower the River, and one of the last movies he did where he played the iconic goofball Jerry Lewis character is a movie entitled Hardly Working. And it's actually not that funny, I'm realizing, whenever I'm just reading them, but you have to watch the trailers to these old Jerry Lewis movies. It's the same type of, like, scenario where he just does something ridiculous, where he's trying to carry on, like, a blue, white-collar, I guess a blue-collar type job or something, like working as a stock boy, or doing this, or doing that, where delivering packages, and something horrible happens, and then it's like the overly enthusiastic announcer, like, oh, that Jerry Lewis, and here he goes again in these wild antics in Jerry Lewis's Hardly Working.
Hardly Working. Watch out, America! Jerry's back! The world's funniest funny man has something to say about inflation and unemployment for all us working stiffs. He's the original jerk, bumbling and stumbling. It's Jerry Lewis in his first new motion picture in a long time.
Oh, I like that.
Hardly working. More fun than a day off.
And, you know, it just kind of goes on from there. I thought it was mildly amusing, but, yeah. So 420, Matt, do you have any fascinating 420 tales to regale us with?
No, but I mean, there's the facts-ish. I mean, I'm a fact guy. I mean, and it's interesting that of course we're planning ahead, but, you know, we have to forget today's tax day, at least for what's left of
it. Oh, man.
Were you smart and took care of that before you went and got started blazing?
I took care of that, but I did not take care of my health insurance.
Oh, noes. Well, I guess you won't have to worry about that until next year.
It's okay. I'm young. I'm healthy.
And it's only 1% of your annual income, so if you... I mean, I don't know. So if you make 50 grand in a year, that means the penalty is $500. And you know what? Considering we pay $700-something a month for insurance here, a month at my house, I'm pretty sure we probably could have gone.
But I'm doing you guys a favor, because I would be on welfare. I don't even make $100 a week.
Wow.
Yeah, so you would be paying for my insurance.
Well, see, there you go. But that's okay. California takes care of everything, right?
Well, yeah. In more ways than you would expect.
I believe it. Well, that's good. Yes, and yeah, we took care of our stuff back in like February or something. But
yeah.
But as far as 420 goes, no. I mean, but it's interesting because 420 is the eponymous date. It comes from the code 420, which is supposed to be like the criminal code. And that's the law, you know, that's like we have a 420 in progress, and that's the idea, because cops would call it, that's how it got around, was that it's a 420 when someone's getting, you know, high on pot or whatever. And so that's how it got co-opted, and then of course, now everything's 420 friendly, or we're celebrating 420 and all that good stuff. And it's interesting, because all of those things in the code are listed in numerical order, hence the 420th code became, you know, whatever. And it's not the same everywhere. That's just kind of what it's been co-opted as. But it's interesting because the other one that most everybody knows is a murder. It's 187. It was the 187th thing in the criminal code, and that's why it's got that code. Which then
murder?
which then kind of gets you the question of, what the fuck were you thinking about that 186 other things got in the way of not killing somebody? surely remembering to not jaywalk should not be higher on the list than murdering somebody.
What's the code for a cat stuck in a tree?
It's
got to be like 10 or something.
It may be. I'm not sure. But I did think that was kind of funny when I found that out. And that's really all the 420 stuff I've got that, you know, because I don't have any interesting 420 stories. I'm all responsible now. All the cool shit that I did was 16 years ago, 17 years ago. Nobody wants to hear about this. Back in my day.
But if they're funny, they're funny.
No, you know, I don't know. Nothing.
Next year,
that's gonna like jump off the page at me. I mean, there was one. There was one. I was at a party, and we had a rule in our parties amongst the friends, and it was called the balcony rule. And the rule is that if you are exited the premises via the balcony, you're not allowed to come back in. And of course, everybody's drunk, everybody's high, everybody's having a good time and everything. But there was this one guy who was just being completely fucking annoying. He was pissing everybody off. And I don't know if it was just because he had, you know, done whatever, but yeah. And so we're like, you know, dude, you either need to go or we're going to make you go. And he just wouldn't leave. So we enforced the balcony rule. And about 20 minutes later, we saw this dude back inside, and we're like, what the shit? He had climbed back up the balcony and gone back in because he thought that if he climbed back up the balcony, it would be okay. And as the only person in the history of our parties whoever pulled this feat off, he was the only one that actually got back in after being exited. Because we were like, you know what? This homeboy is willing to climb the fucking balcony. All right, he can stay. He also did bring it down several notches after. The only other really funny thing that I can think of is, have you ever heard of window pane?
Yes.
Okay. We once convinced somebody that the best way to do window pane was to just do it all in your left eye, because the left part of the visual cortex affects the right side of the brain, which is creativity, and the way to do it.
Hang on, I don't know what that is then.
Oh, it's like a gelatin form of LSD.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, so you would break it and you make it into like a gelatinous...
I was thinking about like real home improvement, like window something. Okay.
No. So it's like gelatin, basically. You just take gelatin and you put it, but it's really, really thin. It's really, really, really thin. You put it in like an 8.5 by 11 baking pan, or 9 by 10, whatever. Baking pan. You're real, real thin. So it's like about the thickness of a sheet of paper. And then you just basically make little 1-inch squares, and you cut that out, and then you break that, and those are little tabs, and so, because you could kind of see through it, so window pane, right? And so we convinced, and you would put it in your eye, you know, because that's how it sucks up the fastest when you put it in your eye. That's why a lot of people, when they do acid, they do the drops, and they put the drops in their eye instead of having it on the paper and putting it on your tongue, right? Okay, so, and if you are learning how to do this as we talk about it, bad, you go, you're not allowed to listen to this. Anyway, so we convinced this one guy to put it in just the left eye, because that would affect the right hemisphere of your brain, and thus the more creative side, and it would make the trip the best. When in actuality, you're supposed to put it in both eyes, because when you do that, you will literally only trip on one side of your brain. And so you could cover your left eye and everything looks normal, and then you could cover your right eye and you're tripping fucking balls on your left eye, and so when you open your eyes, half of you is tripping the fuck out and half of you can see normally. And it was just kind of fun to do that to someone who didn't know it. And we were only really able ever to convince one person to do it. Nobody else would fall for it, and so that was kind of fun. The last story that I can think of that was... This one's not really funny. It's just kind of interesting. Nintendo of America is based out of Washington, up in Redmond. And they have a huge distribution facility. And it's not in the same spot. So out of the distribution facility, which was, you know, like 20 miles away, I would work out there occasionally with my stepdad, because I was a subcontractor with the telephone company or whatever. Business telephone company that they had at the time. And so we went out there one day, and there were police all over the place. And they're like, what the hell's going on? And it turns out that shrooms had been growing all the way in like the corner of the property over by their fence line. And people had figured it out. And there was a big hole cut in the chain link fence, and people were going in there and stealing, or not stealing, just getting shrooms for free. And the police had to come and spread the fungicide out there and kill it all. And then for about a month after that, the police actually patrolled that area pretty heavily too. So go Nintendo. And that's all the 420 stuff that I have. Have I taken up too much time? Oh, look at that. We're 17 minutes into the show.
Tune in next year for Tim's fascinating tales of 420 action, which... By law, I probably shouldn't say anything, but who knows? Who knows? Maybe I will. Tune in next year.
Yay! Tuning in next year. I'm sorry. It's okay. We can, like, just make our news really, really short. Go ahead. Lay it on us. What kind of fun stories do you have?
I need to sit down and do an outline, or it'll go on forever.
Yeah. Like I said, my stuff's, like, 17 years old, so between 17 and 20 years old, so I figure I gotta be okay. There's gotta be... The statute of limitations must have passed at some point on this stuff. I think it's usually 7 years or something, so...
I'll go into details next year.
Okay, once his statute of limitations is passed. All right, so here we go, folks, then, with our extended intro, all drug-based and everything. That's all fun. I guess it is now time to do...
Hey, I'm just a little machine. and I don't work for nobody but you. I'm just a love machine, and I don't work for nobody but you. So when my temperature rise, and then I go for her thighs, and then I say, guacamole in my juice, guacamole in my juice. Hijo de la chingada!
Is that a joint, man?
God damn, it looks like a quarter pounder, man. Led Zeppelin.
Man, be careful with that shit, man.
Is it heavy stuff, man? Will it blow me away?
You better put your seatbelt on, man. I'll tell you that much.
I've been smoking since I was born, man. I could smoke anything, man. You know, like I smoked that Michoacan, man, Acapulco Gold, man. I even smoked that tight stick, you know?
Tight stick?
Yeah, you know, that stuff is tied to a stick, you know?
Tight stick.
Yeah, that didn't even do nothing to me, man. I could probably smoke this whole joint, man, and still walk away, man. Wouldn't be no problem at all, man.
Talk it out, man.
Do nothing to me.
Kind of grabs you by the boo-boo, don't it?
Hey, man.
What?
What? Oh, it was in this shit, man.
Mostly Maui Wowie, man.
Yeah?
But it's got some Labrador in it.
What's Labrador?
It's dog shit.
What?
Yeah, my dog ate my stash, man. Had it on the table and the little motherfucker ate it, man.
Yeah?
So I had to farm around a little baggie for 3 days before I got it back. Really blew the dog's mind.
You mean we're smoking dog shit, man?
The news.
All right, so let's see. I'm trying to figure out what I want to do since we only have... We don't have anywhere near as much time as we normally do.
Well, we can't.
We're going to keep on our regular schedule. We went over on one. We'll make it up here. Let's see. All right. So first up for me, from theexaminer.com, courtesy of Mitchell Molong. Goonies never say die. Goonies sequel in the works, Richard Donner says. Basically, according to director Richard Donner, a sequel is on the way. And he was just really excited. It's almost like a Dan Aykroyd version of this. He's just really excited. He's wanting to do it. He never actually said what stage of production it's in, just that it is actually happening. There have been multiple articles since this announcement where other people involved with the original project, like Corey Feldman, Josh Brolin, stuff like those kind of people are kind of like, what? Huh? I don't know anything about it. And it has been 30 years after the fact. So maybe he might have said sequel, but maybe he's thinking reboot or something. There are also lots of people out there who are like, please don't do that. Please stop. Don't. No. And I'm almost in that camp, actually. I'm not really sure where I land on this. Do you want one or not, Tim?
No.
Okay, good. All right. And then in related other sequel-esque remake news from moviephone.com, courtesy of Chris Jensilowicz, Battlestar Galactica movie remake in the works.
Oh,
now,
God.
It appears that the rumors are true. Much-beloved franchise Battlestar Galactica is getting a movie makeover. Variety is reporting that Universal is doing a complete reimagination of the story. The only thing they don't specify here is whether or not they're going to try and make this big screen. I have a feeling that given that it's been 5 years since we've come off the TV series, that is still pretty impactful. And if you go to sci-fi conventions and or Comic-Cons and stuff like that, you will definitely see the influence that it still has amongst the attendees and the panels and what have you. I think that they are going to try and do this as a big screen movie.
Yeah, Brian Singer was said to have been the developer for a while. I don't know if that's changed or not.
The only thing they have here is that Universal's executive vice president of production, Scott Bernstein, and director of development, Jay Polidoro, are overseeing the latest version.
Oh.
And I gotta say, I really and truly hope that this doesn't happen. Aside from the fact that it's just too soon, it's simply not necessary.
My first piece of news here, it's actually pretty short. Baz Luhrmann, the director of Moulin Rouge, Australia. He did the Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio and the other girl. He also did recently The Great Gatsby. And it looks like his next movie is going to be a take on the classic 1970s David Carradine TV show entitled Kung Fu. That is right. He is going to direct a version of what The Hollywood Reporter says Kung Fu starred David Carradine as Kwai Cheng Kane, a Shaolin monk who came to the American West in search of his half-brother. The show featured flashbacks to his training as a teen in which his master called him Young Grasshopper, a phrase that which has stuck in the pop culture lexicon. Apparently the show aired on ABC from 1972 to 1975 and gained a cult following beyond its run. According to sources, the current script switches the action to China and finds Kane in search of his father, at one point ending up in a prison where he must fight to survive. End quote. And I just gotta say that if this is gonna be a kung fu movie based on the TV show, why is it not going to be based on the TV show? That's all I got to say about it.
Because this is Hollywood in 2014, where it's really just the name they're capitalizing on for a reboot and or remake and or sequel. Not really the story or anything. Nobody knows or cares about that. It was 40 years ago, right? 42 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it would seriously keep me from wanting to go see this movie. But who knows? Probably in the minority.
Minority! At the movie theater!
Indeed, Arini. Alright, well, next up from me here is a pair of CGI informatives. First up from toughpigs.com. This is a Muppet fan site, by the way. Courtesy of guest blogger. Actually, it's by a guy named Matt Smith. This is an interesting article about the CGI, or lack thereof, in Muppets Most Wanted. Everybody automatically seems to think that, for instance, there's a scene where you have Constantine dancing on Ricky Gervais's head. Another scene at the beginning of the movie where you have Constantine breaking out of prison. He's doing a whole bunch of judo flips and all that kind of stuff. And basically all the scenes where you have complete direct human to Muppet interaction, all of these things were CGI. And it's been going around making its way all around the internet. Turns out, no, actually it was not. It was all done with puppets, or Muppets specifically, but all done with puppeteering. Now, they used blue screen and blue suits, but only to do the backdrops for the actual scenes. And in this way, you're actually seeing them working the puppet. People are really working the puppet. It's just Gervais in this particular instance where you have Constantine dancing on his hair. They're standing in front of a blue screen so that you cannot see the puppeteers. And then, of course, when they do the drop on the background, that's when you see the actual set and everything there. And I just think it's really kind of cool because I did fall a little bit victim to that. I actually thought that there was going to be CGI for this, and especially when they're doing stuff like walking outside and whatever else, but no, it's not. And this, they really go through a lot of trouble here to talk about the actual ins and outs of how the CGI worked and how they worked it in with the actual puppeteering and pulled it off to create stuff that I had absolutely no idea was not CGI. They even actually do have a comparison still from the Muppets where they show you how it actually works out and everything. So I just wanted to make sure if anybody was wondering or anybody had seen it, that really and truly is puppeteering at its best. And I think that that deserves a mention.
Very cool.
Yes, next up is from entertainmentweekly.com, courtesy of Darren Franich. Fast and Furious 7, Paul Walker's brothers joining production. After, yes, Fast and Furious 7 took a long production break in the wake of star Paul Walker's death. Rumors circulated about possible directions the film could take in completing the story arc of Brian O'Connor, since the actor had not completed work on the movie. Now the film has restarted, and on the franchise's official Facebook page, Universal has posted a message casting some light on how they plan to finish the film. After noting that Walker, quote, had already shot his dramatic scenes and most of his action, end quote, for the movie, the message explains that Paul's brothers Caleb and Cody have joined the production. Quote, Caleb and Cody are helping us complete some remaining action for their brother and fill in small gaps left in production, end quote. Quote, having them on set has made us all feel that Paul is with us too, end quote. So it looks like they're going to be using them as body doubles, and then probably with the facial mapping and everything like that, it'll take care of it. I think that's really cool because since they announced that they were going to do the CGI stuff, I was really kind of like, really? Come on, really? But now that they're doing it this way, I really think that they have a much better chance of properly pulling it off. And that is what I have on that front, sir. Do you have any comments about that?
No, I just think that's a lot better than just getting some random guy who kind of sort of looks like him from the back to pull it off. So that's good to hear. All right, so next up for me are three Hollywood Reporter articles pertaining to the same movie, Martin Scorsese's recent The Wolf of Wall Street. And actually, two of them pertain to Wolf of Wall Street, and two of them pertain to Russia, and they all kind of link together at the end, kind of. First off, okay, so The Wolf of Wall Street has been getting into a lot of trouble with the real Stratton Oakmont people, the alumni there or whatever. And those are the people that that the movie represent that took part in all of Leonardo DiCaprio's characters' shenanigans and all that stuff behind the scenes. And Andrew Green is one of them. And according to Paramount, or the lawyers at Paramount, that Andrew Green was one of the, quote, one of the malefactors that inspired Scorsese's film. What this Hollywood Reporter article says, and it's entitled Paramount Demands Wolf of Wall Street Defamation Lawsuit Be Dismissed, says that meet Andrew Green, who worked at the corrupt brokerage house Stratton Oakmont between 1993 and 1996, and claimed in a defamation lawsuit filed last month that he was the basis for the character Nikki Rugrat Koskoff in Martin Scorsese's Wolf of Wall Street. Was that smart? On Monday, Paramount Pictures asked a New York federal judge to dismiss the lawsuit and took the opportunity to throw some elbows at Green, who, according to the studio's legal papers, is an inactive member of the State Bar of California and was intimately involved in the persuasive fraud and corruption and characterized the Stratton Oakmont securities operations in the 1990s. Nobody can reasonably dispute that the film is about the bizarre travesty that was Stratton Oakmont, and that plaintiff was one of the malefactors whose central role in Stratton Oakmont inspired Mr. Scorsese's film, adds Paramount's motion to dismiss. For now, the studio isn't arguing that the defamation claims should be fail because the film was substantially true. Rather, Paramount's attorneys are arguing that the lawsuit should fail because the film's portrayal of Nikki Koskoff was not, quote, of and concerning, end quote, Green. And if that argument doesn't do the trick, the studio wants the lawsuit tossed because the movie is artistic and expresses the newsworthy nature of financial fraud, end quotes. And the article kind of goes on a little bit from, well, quite a bit from there. And from this Andrew, what's his name again? Andrew Green, he was saying that the narration taken from the book that it's based on describes him, his character, his the way he looks, something like his receding hairline, his background, what he does, how he talks. Like, it kind of gets into specifics to where, like, he knows it's him, but if you're just an average, I guess, viewer of the movie, one thing you probably wouldn't care, but you really wouldn't pick up on it. And I just kind of wonder, Matt, based on that information, what do you think? Is there any legitimacy in his complaints?
I don't... This is the problem with Scorsese films. If you want to call it a problem. I guess it's a real life problem when he's doing it that could be tied to real life events. He films things in such an over the top way and in such a hyper realistic way that while people like you and I know it is based on a true story, we know that it is not the end point of fact true story. And so we understand license and liberties were taken. Not to mention that it comes from the perspective of one person based on a book. And yet you have so many in the masses who do sit there and go, wow, man, it must have been great to live that way. And what scumbags. So I don't know. When people want to get mad about the way they're portrayed and the way things look in the movies like that, with a Scorsese film, I kind of got to say no, because you know it's Scorsese and you know it's over the top. You know that it's done for visual effect, and I don't know. I got to say no. I think I'm going to go with no. He doesn't have a case.
Yeah, I don't think so either, especially with, I mean, there have been so many lawsuits lately, and the studios have won virtually every single lawsuit, so I really don't see him really coming out on top of this one. But the next article here is entitled Russian Movie Theaters Fined for Showing The Wolf of Wall Street. That is right. In Moscow, three cinema chains and two movie theaters in the Russian city of Novosibirsk were accused of drug use propaganda and fined for a total of $112,770, and that is 4 million rubles, for showing Martin Scorsese's most recent feature, The Wolf of Wall Street. A court in Novosibirsk, the informal capital of Siberia, responded to a complaint from the local Office of the Federal Service for Narcotics Control and ruled that the film, quote, reflected a subculture of drug abusers, end quote, and idolized the use of illegal drugs. The Russian news agency ITAR-TASS reported. So that's pretty ridiculous, but given everything that's been going on in Russia lately, it makes a little bit of sense. And lastly here, the last article, Russian authorities crack down on profanity in movies. This kind of ties in here with why those couple movie theaters were fined for showing the movie. It says that, quote, Moscow, Russia's cultural ministry and parliament are cracking down on the use of profane language in theater and film. The move is likely to primarily hit local releases. The State Duma, the lower chamber of Russia's parliament, is preparing to adopt a law authorized by Stanislav Gavorvikin, a veteran director and President Vladimir Putin's chief of staff during his 2012 re-election campaign. It will be aimed at curbing the use of profane language in the arts. A year ago, a similar law restricting the use of profane language in the media was adopted. Both laws are viewed by many as steps towards censorship. And this Vladimir Medinsky is quoted as to saying, I believe that if a movie has a general release, it shouldn't have any profane language. Our stance is that profanity shouldn't be present on theater, stage, or in the movies. End quote. So the reason why overseas movies, American movies, really won't be affected is because whenever they go through and dub the movies, they don't use really harsh, profane words to dub the movies over with. So instead of saying, holy shit, it's, oh darn, you know. What the fuck is going on? What is going on? But everything in Russian sounds profane, apparently. So if you're planning on making a movie, don't make it in Russian.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the news here for you with just one little bit of interesting news. Turns out that Wes Anderson has his first $100 million feature. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Grand Budapest Hotel has reached a worldwide total of $104,201,376,000. So, yay, Wes Anderson. It's nice that he's getting some real money coming in for this flick. And while there are definitely going to be people who are going to debate whether or not this is the best, or it's just nice that he's finally getting some serious money backing into his project and This will mean that hopefully his next project will even be more widely received, and even more money will start coming into the productions, and who knows what he can do when he starts getting serious money.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's really neat. I mean, he deserves it. He makes quality movies.
Absolutely. I guess that should do it. So, I believe it is now time for... Tears.
Get out of here, Dewey.
What are y'all doing in here?
We're smoking reefer, and you don't want no part of this shit.
You're smoking reefers?
Yeah, of course we are. Can't you smell it?
No, Sam. I can't.
Come on, Dewey. Join the party.
No, Dewey. You don't want this. Get out of here.
You know what? I don't want no hangover. I can't get no hangover.
It doesn't give you a hangover.
Well... I'll get addicted to it or something?
It's not habit forming.
Oh, okay, well, I don't know. I don't want to overdose on it.
You can't OD on it.
It's not going to make me want to have sex, is it?
It makes sex even better.
Sounds kind of expensive.
It's the cheapest drug there is.
Hmm.
You don't want it.
I think I kind of want it.
Three Square, smoking and talking about movies, and Three Square comparing stuff, and doing a bunch of crack, and smoking a bunch of stuff, and ingesting a bunch of stuff, and putting stuff in our eyes, and putting stuff up our bungholes, and stuff like that. Talking about movies and Three Squared.
That's something else, all right. All right, Three Squared for this week was our favorite trippy movies. And... interestingly, one of our favorite trippy movies is a tie, and despite the deadlock, neither one of us is going to drop it in search of another. And I'm going to make it my last film so that hopefully Tim will make it his first film, and then you can hear the two comparisons there. So first up for me is 1994's Killing Zoe, starring Eric Stoltz, Julie Delpy, and pretty much no one else you've ever heard of. This is it's a French film, but it has just enough American behind it that it was an American film too. This is about a guy named Zed, who is a professional safecracker who's come to Paris to do a bank job. And he falls in love with a girl, I guess really a prostitute, and they kind of hook up and... their torrid love affair and how it intertwines with said bank robbery and how everything goes to hell in a handbasket and yet is amazing at the same time. Copious amounts of drugs are taken in this movie. Lots of trippy-dippy action happening, including one chick who even says that it's okay for everybody to shit on her chest, which was the first time I'd really heard about this. I mean, given that this is from 1994 and I saw it in like 96 or so. It's a very interesting movie. It's got a lot of really interesting trippy scenes, and it's also interesting to watch a more or less kind of descent into madness as well. And I just like the framing and everything, and plus I think Eric Stoltz is highly underrated. I really like him in a lot of the stuff that he's done. I think he's made some kind of poor choices, Anaconda being one of them. But I still like him overall. And I definitely like this movie and think that you will too, so please check it out. Especially for all the trippiness in the bar. That's a lot of fun. For me, next up is 2006 comedy stoner film Grandma's Boy, starring Alan Covert, Nick Swardson, Doris Roberts, Linda Cardellini, Shirley Jones, Shirley Knight, and of course Jonah Hill, Kevin Nealon, Peter Dante Joel. This was basically Adam Sandler's kind of thank you to all of the people who had worked with him in all of his movies. And you'll notice that the two biggest stars, more or less, in the movie are the two sub-actors, secondary actors that are in all of his movies. The lead is actually Alan Covert. Perhaps you'll remember him from Mr. Deeds, where he's the guy who's constantly soaping his ass in the showers at the gym. And of course, just tons of fun here. This is a complete stoner movie. It's all about video games. It's all about getting high on weed. And more or less in that order, it's got a wafer-thin plot to it. Tons of retarded jokes. Lots of fun if you're stoned. Actually, still fun even if you're not stoned. And I just truly, truly like it. It's just a lot of fun. If you haven't seen it, just light them up and press play. Last but not least for me, 1968 psychedelic adventure comedy film musical, Head. And this, of course, is the one that stars the Monkees. And this was their desperate attempt to be taken, believe it or not, to be taken seriously as artists experimenting with the medium of film in this era, as well as trying to make a statement in terms of what they thought the world was about. And that was what they went in with the intentions of. And they really wanted to make a statement and a splash with this movie to kind of get away from the TV series. But at the same time, they were trying to let that influence, I guess, the flow of the movie, more or less. It is a stream of consciousness kind of a film. It is completely all over the board. Kind of starts and ends with a group suicide, which is not exactly the best way to start a film, but whatever. And it's just completely psychedelic, all sorts of drugs all over the place. A complete adventure. And it is an adventure. And while the movie completely bombed in the theater and is a critical failure, and is looked at as one of the worst films ever made, it really is a pretty interesting and erstwhile attempt at humor in a psychedelic format. And it's really not all that bad, as long as you are willing to go into it with eyes wide open. And probably wouldn't hurt to be doing some window pane. And that's my 3 squared. So we had 1994's Killing Zoe, 2006 Grandma's Boy, and 1968's Head. Take it away, Tim.
All right. Okay. So Head. We all like it. We all enjoy watching it. It's a fun experience, Head is. Especially the movie.
Now, before going into my review of the movie, let me read this. I saw the movie years ago, for the first time years ago, over about 10 years now. And this past year, I bought the Criterion box set entitled The American Lost and Found, the BBS Story, which within that box set you have Head, Easy Rider, Five Easy Pieces, Drive, He Said, A Safe Place, Last Picture Show, The King of Marvin Gardens. On the Criterion website, this is what it says as the box set info, and I'm going to read this real quick. Like the rest of America, Hollywood was ripe for evolution in the late 60s. Cinema attendance was down. What had once worked seemed broken. Enter Bob Rafelson, Burt Schneider, and Steve Blonner, who knew what Hollywood needed was new audiences, namely young people. And that meant cultivating new talent and new ideas, fueled by money from their invention of the superstar TV pop group The Monkees. They set off on a film industry journey that would lead them to form BBS Productions, a company that was also a community. So these guys, in addition to The Monkees themselves wanting to do something new, these guys wanted to take, these guys being Bob Rafelson, Burt Schneider, and Steve Blonner, wanted to do something different for entertainment, for the movies. And this was one of this is pretty much their first movie in their crazy psychedelic trippiness that they brought to the movie theaters. Because another really good high movie or stoner movie is Easy Rider, and even in Easy Rider they have a whole LSD sequence there towards the end of the movie. But I'm going to start with Head here. When you first watch it, especially if you know the Monkees and you maybe even grew up watching the Monkees, the TV show, listening to their albums, and going to this movie, you don't know how what to think of it. Especially if you've never seen the Pink Floyd's The Wall, if you've never seen Tommy, or just any of those kind of like rock heavy metal, where it's just a movie where it's all music. Mainly, and it's mainly, I guess it's one of those what you call a stream of consciousness movie. And this movie is about the nature of free will. And that's kind of what you can tell in the movie, is that all these guys, there's no really set storyline, but it's all kind of like vignettes. And they're just doing whatever the hell they want to do. And that's kind of what happened. This is one of those movies where it came about while on weed. The Monkees and Jack Nicholson wrote the movie. They were all out in some kind of tropical paradise, sat down with a tape player, and talked about the movie. And Jack Nicholson took about, and they were all high on weed. They were on pot, on the ganja train. And he took what they talked about and turned it into this film. It was not popular. It didn't make a ton of money, but it had a great cult following. It's a very entertaining movie, and like me, when I first watched it, it didn't change my life, but it opened me up to different types of movies. I mean, I've seen Tommy before this, so it didn't totally catch me off guard, but at that time, 10 years ago, I really didn't get into what they called the golden age of cinema, which is the 60s and 70s films. And man, it's just fascinating that this is what helped launch all of that. You take the pretty boys from the 60s, and then you turn them into a little bit more rugged and a little bit more meaty and juicy, I guess. And there's this one, I can't not talk about this one portion of the movie. What I really love about it, what I really like about it, is that it's very funny, but it also gets a little emotional in a way. And I think that's where this movie really does justice when it comes to cinema. It's because you're watching it, you're having a good time, you're trying to figure out what the hell is going on, if you can even tell what the hell is going on. But there's this one song called Daddy Song that Davy Jones sings and dances, he performs with this young woman. How they shot it is absolutely fan-freaking-tastic. But the song doesn't end on the happiest of notes. Daddy Song, a son singing about his dad. But it does something for the movie. I mean, it's hard for me to explain, as you can tell, but it just does something for it. And it, so it's just super, it's a different experience. So go and check it out. It's one of those stream of consciousness style movies, okay? It's not a cohesive story. So just keep that in mind and go have a good time. Especially if you enjoy movies like Tommy or Un Chien Andalou, which I talked about not too long ago. So yes, The Monkey's Head. We all love it. I have a lot of favorite trippy movies. And I thought for our first foray into our first 420 show, I wouldn't get too weird. Because in my catalog of movies that I have enjoyed, there is a lot of really weird shit. And a lot of really weird shit that came about in the 60s and in the 70s. But this next film is not from the 60s nor the 70s, but to me, it captured the feeling of the 70s, the feeling of a person in high school during the 70s. Obviously, I wasn't in high school in the 70s. But I've talked to my dad, and I've talked to a lot of people that were significantly older than me who have related to this movie. It's about these small-town high school. It's the last day of school, and it's about how all these different kids and all these different social or all these different kids in different social gatherings and social groups, how they're going about to celebrate their last day of school. The first night of summer, I should say. Has a great soundtrack. People are smoking pot. It's smoking pot, being with friends, the joy of life and making grown-up decisions. I mean, it has the classic character where he's the football player, the high school football player, and he's deciding whether or not to, well, spend all summer training to stay in football or not to stay in football. And just stuff like that. And it's just fantastic. It's directed by Richard Linklater. It came out in 1993. The budget for the movie was a little over $6 million. It made only $8 million at the box office here in the U.S. However, it has achieved cult status, as well as it is one of Quentin Tarantino's all-time favorite movies. It is one of my all-time favorite movies. It is funny, fantastic tunes. It has some of the best quotable dialogue in any movie. We love With Nell and I. Actually, I believe this is when I last talked about the movie. We talked about With Nell and I being one of our favorite quotable movies. Well, Days of Confused is right up there with it. Because one of my all-time favorite characters, one of cinema's best characters ever, at least cameo characters, is Matthew McConaughey. Absolutely hilarious. One of his best characters, pretty much his first movie. You guys gotta check it out. Days of Confused, you'll love it. And then my final movie is the stereotypical drug movie. Very stereotypical if you're first getting into hallucinogens, psychedelics, or whatever. Or even smoking weed, doing poppers, doing whippets. The movie you usually gravitate towards first is Pink Floyd's The Wall. This is another one of those weird but impactful movies. Because the main character, his name is Pink, there's not a story to it at all, but his character is detached. He's in an emotional state throughout the entire movie. He's a rock star, probably suicidal. It goes into the album Pink Floyd The Wall from there. It shows him in a hotel room, just looking all depressed and shit. And it just, in the entire movie, just goes into the darkest depths of this guy's mind, where you have suicide, drugs, girls, sex, rock and roll, all this stuff, but you look at it from a very horrific and dramatic point of view. Especially the song, you know, Another Brick in the Wall. The production in this movie, the musical production of that song, is absolutely fantastic. There's so much social commentary. And if you're doing any drug, well, depending on the person, some people will freak out. Not only will you freak out in amazement, but something will click in your mind. And that something will click, but then by the time the come down happens, you will absolutely forget about what this movie means and how it stands. Not everybody, but there are a number of people out there that are like that. It's an important movie, especially in cinema history. You gotta check it out. It's fun, it's entertaining, it's trippy. Fantastic movie. It's Pink Floyd. You cannot go wrong. So, then again, it is 1982's British live-action film, Pink Floyd's The Wall. Go check them out.
Okay, well then I think that we should be concluding our three squared, and I believe that we probably have something on our hands as quite a good discussion for next week. A masterpiece discussion, if you will, about Cinemax going to war with an actress who refused to do nudity. There is an excellent article on CinemaBlend.com about it, and Tim was going to do it as a news piece, and I wanted to do it as a news piece, but we ran out of time, and nobody got to do it as a news piece, and I think that it would make a very interesting discussion. What do you think, Tim? Should we do that next week for a masterpiece discussion?
We should.
Well, then that is what we're going to do. We're going to cover that CinemaBlend.com article, Cinemax Goes to War with Actress Who Refused to Show Her Nipples. That's right. That is the actual article title.
Nipples? It's not breasts?
Nope.
It's nipples?
Cinemax Goes to War with Actress Who Refused to Show Her Nipples.
It just doesn't sound right.
Well, I guess that's the important part. You know, side boobs, one thing. But when you start hedging in on the areola area and then get to the nipple, uh-oh, that's the big money there. All right, so then I guess we're on to the last portion, right?
We are.
Then let's do it. Here we go. It's the movie.
We were somewhere around Barstow, on the edge of the desert, when the drugs began to take hold. I remember saying something like,
I feel a bit lightheaded. Maybe you should drive.
Suddenly, there was a terrible roar all around us, and the sky was full of what looked like huge bats. all swooping and screeching and diving around the car. And a voice was screaming, Holy Jesus, what are these goddamn animals? We had 2 bags of grass, 75 pellets of mescaline, 5 sheets of high-powered blotter acid, a salt shaker half full of cocaine, a whole galaxy of multicolored uppers, downers, screamers, laughers, also a quart of tequila, quart of rum, case of beer, pint of raw ether, and 2 dozen amyls. Not that we needed all that for the trip, but once you get locked into a serious drug collection, the tendency is to push it as far as you can. The only thing that really worried me was the ether. There is nothing in the world more helpless and irresponsible and depraved than a man in the depths of an ether binge. And I knew we'd get into that rotten stuff pretty soon.
All right, so this week for the movies, we had Crystal Fairy and the Magical Cactus and 2012, if you look at the title card of the actual film. Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny and Half-Baked. Tim, where would you like to start, sir?
Let's go with Half-Baked.
We look at that day as the day we met the fifth member of our crew.
Gentlemen, assume your positions.
Thurgood, Brian, Kenny, and Scarface.
Just feel like you're floating?
This weed is fantastic.
Their jobs stink.
You suck, you suck, you suck, you're cool.
Their sex life is zero.
How do I know you're not lying to me?
How do I know you got panties on, Mary Jane?
I don't.
And their lives are going nowhere.
I'm a professional meter hopper.
You have smoked yourself retarded.
Yo, who's our munchies tonight, yo?
Make sure it's chocolate. Gotta have chocolate. Graham crackers.
Pizzas, man.
Celery, grape jelly.
Peanut butter.
Popcorn.
Beef jerky.
With water. Whole lot of water.
You must have been so hungry.
But now, they're in trouble.
I just gave him some candy and some chips and some pink popcorn and...
All we gotta do is raise 10% of 1 million, yo. Which by our calculations is
fucking impossible, man.
The Food and Drug Administration are having us do a study.
1 pound of marijuana and you can sign for it right here.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you. I got it. I know how we can get Kenny out.
Weed, man. We'll sell weed.
Isn't that the custodian?
Maui, wowie.
We'll let his heart up. Pick up that car with the smiley face.
This guy is weak, crazy.
They're not drug dealers, they're fundraisers.
Go get me this Mr. Nice Guy.
Well, you know, I'd be from Jamaica, man.
What part of Jamaica?
Right near the beach. Boy!
From Universal Pictures comes a story that proves...
I'm somebody's bitch.
Oh! 3 heads are better than one.
Peace out, man.
I just stopped smoking yesterday.
I remember when a dime bag cost a dime.
Half baked.
I'm sorry!
It's the 1998 stoner comedy film starring Dave Chappelle, Jim Brewer, Harlan Williams, and Guillermo Diaz. And it's about, it's basically just a group of no goods, well, not good, just ne'er-do-wells. There we go. Let's use that fun word. Who find themselves in a position where they pretty much have to start selling pot. And boy, does it go well for them. And to bail their friend out of jail is why they're really having to do this. It is your typical stoner comedy film. And actually has one of the coolest exits things that the exit lines that people have ever listened to and or quoted. Which is the, you know, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, you're cool, I'm out speech. It's kind of starts off like a mock of Jerry Maguire, but it quickly turns into something else. It's actually quite funny. I think that this movie is a great stoner film. It is strictly good as a stoner comedy. This is not the upper echelon of comedy filmmaking, and it is not a serious attempt at making a comedic effort. It's just simply stoner humor. And it's good stoner humor. And I'm going to give this one, based on its stoner humor, for that. And the fact that it's great to watch Chappelle dancing and singing, at least in voiceover, about how he got laid. which makes me laugh even now. I'm going to give this one 4 stars. But again, based on it being a stoner film, I'm kind of altering my star rating system here because, well, it's 420 episode. And we're trying to do this based on the stonerists. The stonerism, I guess. I like it. It's got some funny stuff in it. And I'm going to give it 4 stars based on being a good, funny stoner film.
You know, I didn't care for this movie too much. I first time I saw it is this past week. And I remember back when it came out, seeing the trailers for it and seeing that, like, Harlan Williams was in jail and he has the soap and he drops the soap and, like, his expression on his face is so funny. And the movie starts off quite promising, but it kind of, to me at least, it turns into like a one-trick pony sort of thing where it's like the same joke. It's weird. Scenes are shot really well, but when they're blatantly trying to be funny, and it's weird. It's really weird because they have some really funny, witty dialogue, and the interaction between the guys, like whenever they're just talking and bantering, it's pretty funny. It has some funny stuff. But then whenever they purposely have to, like, progress the story or do something, or there's like a side gag or a side joke, that's ultimately where the movie fails for me. Like the whole thing with the dog getting high, I just thought that was so stupid. The whole thing with him and the girlfriend stuff, it's just like, then the entire thing, it's like, the girl, you're so stupid. Not only has he's lied to you like more than two times already about smoking weed. He told you he was going to quit and he did it again and he did it again. It's like, at first I thought, it's like if Dave Chappelle played the character straight the whole movie, because at the beginning of the movie he plays the character pretty straight and doesn't go over the top until a little bit later on. And it's every once in a while he goes over the top. But whenever he's the janitor, and he's the whole weed thing when he's interacting with the scientist and, you know, like, hi there, scientist. And he's just, you know, and he's like, okay, can you do this? I know you're just a janitor, but can you do this for me? And he's like, oh, well, I know that you're just a scientist, but can you just hold this for me and mop up the rest of the fucking floor? Just stuff like that. It was really funny. I mean, he had some very witty jokes. He wrote the movie, so I guess that helps. But again, the movie just falls apart whenever they're blatantly trying to be funny or trying to make a joke or trying to progress the story because they ultimately have to. And therefore, the movie kind of goes around in circles for me. And unfortunately, I give this movie 1.5 out of 5. I just a little bored. I mean, I did enjoy some of it, but ultimately, I didn't dig it. Didn't dig it. So 1.5 out of 5 for me.
All right, sir. Where do you want to go from here?
About Tenacious D.
Prepare yourselves for the motion picture experience of the century. Two righteous dudes on an epic quest to become the greatest rock and roll band of all time. But first they must find
the Peak of Destiny!
This pig is our ticket to genius. We're never gonna find this thing.
Follow me. We are the shadows.
From New Line Cinema comes the most important film.
Sasquatch!
In the history of films.
We are Tenacious D. The greatest band on earth.
And Kyle Gass. What? Tenacious D in the Pick of Destiny.
Give me a power slide. Full throttle.
How'd that feel?
Really good. How did it look?
Amazingly bad.
Here we go, Tenacious D in the Pick of Destiny, the 2006 musical comedy film featuring rock duo Tenacious D, starring Jack Black and Kyle Gass. The film was filmed in THC, which was probably the funniest part of the whole movie, actually. There's lots of smoking of the ganja and what have you. You know, I thought when we were watching this movie, and I have to admit, I picked this movie. I knew that there was stoner action in it, and so I was like, okay, well, you know, it's pot stuff. Let's, you know, I'm sure it'll be pretty good. And then, of course, you have the opening, which totally reinforces that it was going to be, there was going to be more to it than what it was. And while Tenacious D, their live shows are really interesting and can be quite fun, and they definitely have fun with the characters and the idea of what they are behind the band when they perform on stage, that does not translate to the film. I was really hoping to like this movie. I thought that I was going to enjoy this movie. I know about Tenacious D. I know about their music. I've seen their shows, not live in person, but, you know, videos and whatnot. So I really thought I knew I was getting into this, and it's just not. I just really wasn't impressed with it. I thought the writing was really kind of lazy for the most part. Instead of bringing the characters that they portray in their shows as the group Tenacious D to life, I felt that they were making caricatures out of caricatures, because that's kind of their shtick with Tenacious D in the first place. Some of the musical numbers were pretty good because they're very reminiscent of the show. Some of them comes straight from the show or what have you, from their live shows. But I just really wasn't impressed. It wasn't funny. There's a couple of little funny little jokes and stuff in there, but for the most part, it just did not do it for me. 2 stars. I just didn't like it. And I was really disappointed.
Yeah, this is another one where they're just blatantly trying to be funny, you know? And it's not going the creative, like, gross-out humor. It's just, like, I don't have a problem when a movie uses the F-word over and over and over again. But I swear, it's like, every time I heard him say, you know, talk about genitalia or something like that again, or something had to be a penis, something looked like a penis, or a cock. It's just everything just seemed too forced. The opening music number with Meatloaf, hilarious. I loved how it started off like that. It's kind of, it started off like a rock opera, and I just wish it kind of stayed like that all the way through. It took too long to get to the pick of destiny, which is what the movie is about. I say this so much. I'm sick and tired of origin stories. Especially origin stories where you really don't care about the people that you're watching to warrant a origin story. And it would be one thing if it took them maybe like the first 20 minutes or even the first 30 minutes to set up their bond and their relationship. I really wanted this movie to be about more about them facing the devil, or maybe them becoming famous and then the devil wants to take their soul because of, you know, they're, you know, using his tooth or whatever. Instead of it being about him having, instead of it having to be Kyle or Jack Black having to prove himself to Kyle Gass, that he should be in his band or they should be bandmates because they love rock and all this stuff. It starts off great with rock and roll references to Dio and Black Sabbath. But then, like, as the jokes go on, they become cheaper and less funny. The songs themselves, standing alone, are pretty entertaining and pretty good. But other than that, there's really not much more to the movie. I enjoyed it, but then I don't enjoy it. So I'm kind of between 2 stars and 2.5 here. I don't know, it's weird. I guess I'll lean towards 2.5. for Tenacious D in the Pick of Destiny. Just wanted more to it, or more from it.
Check this out, this guy's insane.
Man, are you guys stupid. Don't you know genius when you see it? Damn! Anyway, my name's JB.
just rolled into town.
Would you give me some space?
Yeah.
You're kind of crapping my style.
Ah, oh, dude, I'm sorry.
And you're driving away my crowd. If you can just move it back, like I asked you earlier, I think things are going to be a lot better.
Okay, fine. Sorry.
Thanks.
Can't you see he's the man? Let me hear you applaud. He's more than a man. He's a shiny golden god. If you think it's time to fucking rock and fucking roll out of control, well then you know you've got to run the block. You fucking sock my fucking cock. Cause when you rule, you fucking school all of the fools out of their jewels. Cause if you think it's time to,
if you think it's time to,
if you think it's time to fucking rock, he is going to kick your fucking ass. And you know his name is Kyle Gass. Rocking and fucking rolling and fucking rocking and fucking rolling and fucking rhythmic blues.
Right on. Well, I guess as an aggregate here, we're just not doing very well with our stoner films. Maybe next year. Maybe next year. And last but not least, then, we have Crystal Fairy and the Magical Cactus and 2012. It's a 2013 Chilean adventure comedy film. It's written and directed by Sebastian Silva. It stars Michael Cera and Gabby Hoffman. Okay, so we have Michael Cera. He plays a rather self-absorbed... let's just... kind of a prick.
A likable prick.
There we go.
When he's not trying to...
Yeah, because he's not kind of going out of his way to be a prick. He just kind of is one. He's very vapid. And he's also single-minded. He is trying to get a hold of a hallucinogen from the San Pedro cactus. And he's kind of planned this whole trip to go and do this thing. He's got some... people he lives with in Chile that he's going with them. They're going to go and get some San Pedro and go out to the beach and partake of the hallucinogen. And they come across a young lady by the name of Crystal Fairy, who will subsequently become known as Crystal Harry. And you can watch the film and figure out why. And she, with the insertion of herself at the drugged out behest of Jamie, changes the dynamic of the group of guys and really brings to the forefront a little bit of that prickish side of Jamie. And they kind of have an adventure and all wrapped around the magical cactus. I gotta say that I was not expecting a lot out of this movie. And while the movie isn't all that great, it is not a bad movie either. This movie leaves quite a lot to the imagination, and it was also there was some actual hallucinogen action happening when they were making the movie. There was more of a spec script involved than a true shooting script, which you can see in terms of the flow of the film, but everybody really had a good grasp on their characters and how the characters should move. And I gotta hand it to Sebastian Silva for that. He really knew how to coax the characters out of their shells and get these people to behave in a very natural fashion, given the way that the movie was made. Technically, the movie is shot very well, and they've got good actors. The writing is... but still pretty decent. At the end of the day, though, this movie really didn't do it for me, mainly because it was leaving a little bit too much. It was leaving a little too much to the imagination. And however, I will have to say I found this movie very interesting. And so while it's not, I didn't quite like it. It's better than okay. So I'm going to come right in the middle. I'm going to be a 2.75 on this one. And if you are into trippy movies at all, if you're a fan of Michael Cera even, I would definitely say give this a shot. Otherwise, take it or leave it.
I absolutely loved this movie. 5 out of 5 for
God,
me.
Surprise!
Reason being is because I freaking know these people. I know exactly what they're feeling. I know what's going on. I've not in Chile, not the San Pedro cactus, but I know exactly what Michael Cera's character, what he, like his, why he the way, why he is the way he is. He's been planning to trip out on this drug. I understand why he's wanting to do it. I know why he's wanting to control everything so he, you know, he can, like everything is planned out because he's been looking forward to it for a long, I mean, I've known people like him. I've known even people like Crystal Fairy, the girl Crystal Fairy, who, when you first see her, you think she's weird and bizarre. Look at her because she doesn't groom and take care of herself. But there's more to her than just that. And it's just spectacular because I definitely know girls like that. I've known girls like that. I've seen people wigging out and tripping out on stuff and knowing why they did that because of the type of person that they are, you know, going into taking drugs, you know, their negative outlook of going, and then just knowing the guys that don't want to do it, you know, that are in the group. But then there's the other guy that's saying, oh, come on, you know, we're a group, you have to do it, you know, trying to force it on the guy. The dynamics of the characters and of the group of friends and how they react towards one another, I mean, it's great. You know, it's just a great, great movie. There's more to it than a bunch of people going out to take drugs on the beach. Like Matt said, it's shot beautifully. Gabby Hoffman performs the character perfectly. Again, spot on. I know of girls that are just like her in so many different ways, coming from like troubled pasts, and they just have a very interesting way of looking at things. This movie is based on experiences of Silva, of the director. He's actually in the movie along with his two other brothers, which is pretty cool. The movie has a fantastic flow to it, has a great build-up to it. It's just wonderful. I mean, this movie took me by surprise, despite all the great things I've heard about it. I just absolutely love it. When it comes down to it, to me, if a movie can capture certain moments that I've experienced in real life, and the movie's able to capture those moments and allow me to experience them again through the movie, it says a whole lot to me. It's just great. I'm trying not to say too much of the movie to spoil it, because I definitely highly recommend. This is also a great acting turn for Michael Cera as well. Just a fantastic character as well as movie. So again, 5 out of 5 for me, Crystal Fairy and the Magic Cactus.
Hola.
Hi.
You speak English?
Yeah.
Where are you from?
America, everywhere.
Me too.
Yeah?
You're the first American I've met here. Champa.
This is Champa. I live with Champa. Him. We live together, yes.
This is Crystal Fairy.
Your name, sorry?
Crystal Fairy.
This is the perfect thing in my life right now, like to do this, to do mescaline. So your brothers are going to take it too?
Yeah, I think so.
We'll have a psychoactive voyage.
Yeah, yeah. King of the bongo,
king of the bongo. Hello, that was Crystal Fairy.
The crazy dancing girl.
How did she get my phone number?
You gave it to her, man. Welcome to the group, Crystal Fairy.
Thank you. So happy there's nobody in
my place instead of me. Do you think this is going to be crazy to have her with us the whole time? Like, who is she?
She's like part of us, you know?
She's not part of me, man. Crystal Harry, why are you naked?
You like Crystal Harry? I like Crystal Harry, that's good.
Okay, guys, Harry Fairy is getting ready.
Yeah, that poor loco is driving me loco.
Come on. Shut up. I'm a man on fire. We made this plan to drink San Pedro on the beach. It's been an ancient tradition. It's safe. Don't worry.
Hey, you guys. There's a San Pedro cactus here.
Senora, we want to buy your cactus.
No.
You want to jump the fence, man? It's kind of criminal, isn't it?
I like having this big boy between my legs. Beautiful here!
Oh, guys, I just want to say I'm really happy.
Oh, we need our magical pebbles. We need our good energy pebbles, our crystals. Does everybody have them?
Yeah, I don't think I really need this crystal.
Maybe we should break the ice with talking about, you know, maybe what we're afraid of.
hopelessness, uncertainty.
Yeah, I don't know, the ocean and, like, sharks.
Seems like maybe you're just afraid of being honest and opening up.
Yeah, I really am actually just afraid of sharks, though.
All right, well then that brings us to the close of another wonderful movie segment. Next week, the movies, we're going to kind of take it back a notch, and we're going to go a little classic on us. We're going to bring back the Man with No Name trilogy, or the Dollars trilogy, as some people may have heard of it, all directed by Sergio Leone and starring Clint Eastwood. The films, if you don't know what these classic spaghetti western films are called, shame on you, and you better watch them over this next week. They are A Fistful of Dollars from 1964, For a Few Dollars More from 1965, and The Eponius, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly from 1966. That's right.
Or however it goes.
Indeed. So, I guess that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Well, then, let's go ahead and get...
Spiel on.
Spiel,
oh,
yeah.
I think it's...
Spiel.
Yeah, spiel. It is a spiel. Let's do the spiel, then. All right, here we go, folks. The music has been special this week, and we hope that you've enjoyed it. Which leads me to just simply this. We are, of course, the SLS Cast. You can go to our website, slscast.com. You can send us an email to theslscast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @theslscast. You can go to Facebook and search the SLS Cast there. And, of course, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or favorite us on Stitcher. And I guess that's really about it. So until next week, this here is Matt, saying that thanks to Roseanne Barr, I get to say this. My husband and I didn't sign a prenuptial agreement. We signed a mutual suicide pact.
Edgar Allan Poe was a druggist, drug enthusiast, and this is what he had to say about it.
I have absolutely no pleasure in the stimulants in which I sometimes so madly indulge. It has not been in the pursuit of pleasure that I have periled life and reputation and reason. It has been the desperate attempt to escape from torturing memories, from a sense of insupportable loneliness and a dread of some strange impending doom. Talk to you guys next week.
Have fun.
And be safe.
Hang on, helicopter.